Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby! Touchdown!
Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns. Once again, on Friday, we will be joined by our guest, our usual guest, our great guest, John Colosimo. In the meantime, before we get to that guest, got to talk to you about TickPick. You've heard me talking about him every single day on this podcast for a week now, maybe 2 weeks, I can't remember. T-I-C-K, P-I-C-K, use them personally in Texas. Great results. The price as advertised is the price you pay at the finish line. Used the promo code breakdown. Again, TickPick, T-I-C-K, P-I-C-K. .com/breakdown. Get $10 off your first usage. If you're going to Texans game, going to the Bears game, use it. Take advantage of $10 off. They're going to get you the tickets to your email within an hour after you purchase. It's a fantastic opportunity that has a lot of great things inside the application as well in terms of local food around the stadium, hotel options, Uber options, all the great stuff you need all wrapped up in one great app. So make sure you take advantage of TickPick. And again, they will match up to 110% if you find a cheaper seat than what they offer on their website or application. So take advantage. If you're going to a game, use them. Now we shift over to our guest, John Colosimo, who again, just a subtle reminder, will be joining us every Friday. We're going to talk about the game before, the game coming up, and a little bit of everything in between around the NFL. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Jake?
I'm hanging in, man. It has been a week of travel. You're more experienced in this than I am. I think American Airlines, just to give you some of Jake's struggle here, he paid $30. I just third person myself, my friend. I paid $30 for a check-in bag. I've only flown Southwest, paid $30 for a check-in bag, and then realized that I didn't have to do that. I could just take it through security, and they will just, like, if they think it's a bag that doesn't fit is a stowaway, they'll put a tag on it and take it with them. You ought to pay the $30. So they got me for $30 and then, you know, figured out I need to get some more convenient luggage stuff if I'm going to travel. Very ill-equipped. Not my best experience, but we made it there. One piece, made it back. One piece, a lot of stuff in between. Tried to do some shows, tried to do some, you know, chalk talks. I'm going to put those on YouTube, by the way, guys. I'm going to have those up on our YouTube channel instead of Twitch, since we're not going to do them live. Have Kyle Murphy talking about 50 minutes of O-line play. Have 49 minutes of John Stephenson talking about the Browns coverage and where things went wrong. And then I'm going to try to make it a perfect 48 minutes on a Baker breakdown by tomorrow, too. So we'll see if that shakes out. But, John, talk to me, man. We're like, what, 5 days removed from the Chiefs game? Where you at? Do you feel better than you did before? Worse? You know, you got some injury stuff that's shaken out from now to then. We know Dell's not back. I'm just kind of curious where you're at after the game and what you thought about it in general.
You know, I'm pretty much in the same place that I was Sunday night. You know, obviously the sting is less, but you know, the general feelings about the game are the same. I still feel very good, generally speaking, about how the entire team looked. I love what the offense was doing. I think Baker played a great game that indicated that we have almost 100% carryover from what he was doing his last 12 games of last season. So, like, all those things are really good. I've tried to just wait for smarter minds to break down the defense so that I don't just flip out about a couple of plays in my layman's view of that. But, you know, I'm feeling good. I feel, you know, I feel strong about coming in. I also think we had a pretty good finger on the pulse with regards to what was important in that game. So, that, you know, I think that we kind of called some things out last week of some keys that I think were keys, and for better or worse.
Yeah, I definitely talked with John Stephenson about the lack of, it felt like, paying attention to Kelce. I know you can only do so much, but I would have preferred maybe finding 10 snaps where you roll your cover three safety down into his area and sort of pigeonhole him, right? Like, there were some things, and I addressed them with John in the video that you'll see tomorrow. Like, I addressed some things that I would have done differently, but yeah, we were talking about the two dangerous weapons and those two dangerous weapons were the guys that got him. But again, you know, if you keep them under 35 and you can score five touchdowns, you can beat Kansas City. It's not an easy task, but you know, their defense isn't world beating in terms of sheer talent. Like, you can score touchdowns on those guys. So listen, it's a game I feel like if it were week eight, they would have handled far better. I think there were some week one nerves, some remembering that this is the place that are, and that was the thing that Nick Chubb said, right, John? Like, Nick Chubb's like, well, we lost last year in the playoffs and it ended our season. And then we lost, you know, yesterday in unceremonious fashion. And we felt like our season was over in a weird way again, because that's what you remember. Like, you just remember that feeling. So you got to like pick yourself up and remind yourself that, oh yeah, we have 16 more games to play. So we'll see how the leadership does. I think it'll tell a real story this past week to see if they, I've said it all week on this pod too, like, can't let the Chiefs beat you more than once, right? You can't let that game linger and cost you two winnable games here. So we'll see.
Now,
go ahead.
Real quick though, before we move on from that, like, I just want to take two things on Kelce. Like, one of those things was, and I hope that you guys covered this in there, is, you know, what they were trying to do with those zone coverages. It didn't, you know, versus, you know, space dropping versus kind of some pattern matching, that kind of stuff. So that I think was frustrating to watch in the moment, because it just seemed like he was able to find the open space. But the other part of that I wanted to roll back to was watching that Manning cast the next time they had Kelce on. I immediately, you know, perked my ears up when Kelce was talking about freelancing. And I wonder, you know, how much you can really do if you're not in man coverage against him, because he basically said they got freedom to just wing it inside there. I don't know if you saw that part of the Manning cast there, but it basically it summed up by saying that they do pretty much wing it quite often, it seemed like.
There's 100% option routes. They sniff it out, man. Like, I think they run three-way go option routes, and it's tough, right? It's tough, but that's where I was talking about. If you go back and watch the Tyreek Hill touchdown, it's cover three, and they roll MJ Stewart down to the field side, and that's where Kelce is in the slot, and they bracket him, take him away. It was actually one of their better coverage plays of the entire game. It just so happened that they both D tackles went from three techs to the A gap and clog themselves up. So Mahomes does his vertical to horizontal scramble, step up, slide out to the right. And, you know, Jordan Elliott's a step behind him because he's congested in the middle, stacked right on top of Malik Jackson. So it was a matter of inches there, but they covered everything perfectly. They had everybody in the right spot. And John Johnson tries to turn the ball, reaches his hand back, and is about 2 inches from tipping it away. But
right, that fantastic throw from Mahomes where he eats it. You know, 50 yards downfield.
Yeah, let's fawn over the sidearm throw where he chucked. That's a turnover-worthy ball. I don't care if it worked out. It's a process that I don't believe in. And I think if you're going to say, well, he meant to throw it behind, and he knew John Johnson was going to turn his head. Okay, dude, come on. I get it. There's plenty of things to fawn over Pat Mahomes about, but let's stop. Just stop. So that got out of control. But, you know, they are who they are. They're not going to allow deep middle plays. They don't want to give up those plays. They funnel everything, man. They will let you take 6 yard gains for the most part. Now, they did sprinkle in like 20% of man, and they gave it a go, and they did. But they're going to funnel you. But what they have to get better at is understanding route leverage. They don't seem to understand the concepts teams will throw at them. Now, this is one game in. I got to say, in the KC game, they didn't have a feel for what routes were being run, that routes paired together. And we talk about in the pod, and we definitely broke down the touchdown, that the 3-by-1 touchdown where they're running that flare motion, and they just literally just, there's nobody there. They dink it to Kelce standing there wide open. It's a cover three a linebacker rotation miscue that was happening that they took advantage of two times. We covered that. We covered the Kelce just straight up 5 yard out where he's got that option route, and Malcolm Smith is playing ridiculous inside leverage and two man at the 10 yard line. Right. And MJ Stewart is standing in the end zone, just watching it. And it's like, the thing I want them to do when they play KC again is bracket. Like, no, hey man, he wants to go to 87. Like, he just does. make him throw the ball to DeMarcus Robinson. And maybe Robinson makes plays or Cole Hardman makes plays, but take away his bread and butter. At least it's like making Danny Green beat you. You know, you kind of like Harrison Barnes, roll the dice, whatever, you know. Be creative and try some things here and there.
Somebody brought this up on Twitter to that point where it was like the anti-Belichick method of taking away what you do best and making you do something with the rest. And we did like the opposite because the entire offense still just went. I mean, what? I think it was 17 of 23 passes, something like that, went to Kelce and and Hill, and that was basically the entirety of the expected points there. I mean, you know, so it was just the antithesis of what you've seen Belichick do for the last 15 years.
Yeah, because what you bank on with that, John, is like with that discomfort of taking away what you like to do, what you know to do, what you're most comfortable, that you will make a mistake. Yeah, you know, you'll force some things. You'll get discomfort to creep in, and then you'll do something stupid, right? Uncharacteristic. And that's what you bank on with that. You know, you're taking away, trying to take away those guys, make other guys beat you. And sometimes plays like we saw in the Raiders, you know, Ravens game, right? Where I think it was Zay Jones on a man coverage game. He just gets picked and it works out. Like that happens though, but you're not, not bent out of shape about that. Like if that's DeMarcus, I say, hey man, at least you're trying to take away 10 and 87 because it's death by a thousand cuts. Those guys are so in sync that they'll just do it. Now, again, there's the other side of the coin, which says, hey, we made them punt two times and we made them kick field goals two times. And that's enough to win the game. So it did, in theory, work, in my opinion. You're not going to hold Kansas City to under 30 points that often. It's rare, you know, like it's super, super rare. And you have to score the points at the end of the game that the Browns needed to score. And they win. It's a completely different conversation. And we're probably hearing a little bit more praise about, hey, man, held them under 35. Look at this. It's a framing thing. I just think if this game were week 8 where they'd been exposed to gigantic crowds, less nerves from your punter because he's got rocking and rolling again in a raucous environment. Same with your quarterback. Same with the communication. You know, the two illegal motion penalties, like you eliminate those because of, you know, just being in the environment. Those plays were plays where Baker just didn't think about it, right? Right? The crowd's going crazy. He doesn't think to look if the guy's set. And I've not been out of shape, dude. The more I've gotten away from it, the even less I care about that game. I just hope that the Chubb comment that was said doesn't linger, where that, you know, you leave that game and you think, well, our season's not over now. You know, you just don't want those vibes to carry on, you know, because that's.
Let's say this, you know, for anybody who's thinking it was like last year, okay? No, we covered a monstrous gap, all right? Anybody who thinks that we were all that close, missing a quarter and a half of Pat Mahomes is a huge flipping deal.
Yeah.
You know, the offense scored at will for most of that game up until basically the Chubb fumble. But, you know, if you look at, we're the number one DVOA offense. I mean, our numbers are off the charts for this offense. We made up a huge amount of ground to play a full game at Arrowhead against Pat Mahomes and this team. Like, so if you are sitting here thinking that it was just like last year, no. Okay, we really weren't that close. And if Pat played the whole game, you know, you see how quickly things turn. And if you don't think that that's exactly what was going to happen last year in the playoffs, and he played a full game, you're out of your skull. Yeah. You know, so, you know, that's just the other point I want to make, here, that we played a complete game with them. And if that's what it is, that first game of this season, we're 4 points away from them in their stadium making mistakes. That's pretty damn good and a lot farther than we were in January.
For sure. I would completely agree with that, that I left that playoff game thinking the Browns had a chance to steal it because they had a chance to steal it because of the situation with Pat. I left this game this year thinking, I think this team is better. I just think that they had a growing moment where they lost when they shouldn't have lost. I cannot reiterate the things I've heard. I cannot reiterate enough the things I've heard from people that were at that game about how loud it was. And again, you were, and I know everyone on the team is exposed to that. They played college ball, whatever, but you go away from it for a year. It's a lot. And I just think that there's some elements to week one nerves and the situation up against the, I'm just, Your two exposures have been tough losses in Kansas City. You need to come home and just beat the shit out of the Texans and just feel good about yourself. And there's no reason to think that shouldn't happen. So that's a bow tie on Kansas City. I wrote on Anthony Schwartz. John wrote a great rookie write-up collectively. Check those two pieces out. I would have wrote more as usual, like I said, but the travel stuff got away from me. But we've covered it extensively on this podcast the last few days. So if there's any more you're craving from that game, you can find it. And again, tomorrow there will be film breakdowns on three different elements of that game for your consumption purposes. Let's talk about around the AFC North. so much. Cincinnati feeling great about themselves and the Minnesota. And they should. You know, you get a home win and you kick it to walk off and all of that. And I'm not worried about the Bengals. I don't know how much you watched of that game. I'm not too worried about them.
No, I think they do seem like who I thought they would be. You know, I think they're going to have a year that's somewhat like Baker's rookie season, where they're going to have a lot more fun than they had last year and previous years before that. But ultimately, you know, 7-10 seems about right. Maybe, you know, maybe 6-11, something like that. Definitely not scary. And neither of the Vikings, to be honest.
No.
We're talking about that game.
Yeah, the week four. Irv Smith loss hurts them significantly. And the Cincinnati thing, we'll see how it shakes out. I still don't think Joe is all too confident. You know, he walked off the field, beat up a couple times, limping. I think Joe's a great quarterback. I think he's got a bright future in the NFL. But there are such key pieces missing from that team that you can't take them as light as you have in previous years, but there's holes there that you can certainly see. But that's a good win for them, given that they let Minnesota come back in that game. Pittsburgh goes into Buffalo, right? Shocks the NFL. I mean, shocks most people, maybe unless you lived in Pennsylvania or you're one of the people in Southeast Ohio who love Pittsburgh, which is way too many. That game is so weird. I thought it was a game where the NFL is a hunger business. I say that all the time. It's a motivation business. Buffalo, I think, had a little bit of we show up, we'll win going on there, in my opinion, as far as drive and making winning plays, those effort plays. I didn't see a ton of that from them. And if you let Pittsburgh linger, listen, man, they're going to do the same old thing they've done for like the past 5 years, which is chuck it up a couple times down the sideline, and you're going to get a PI call, or maybe Chase Claypool will come in and somehow steal one. Like, that's their offense. They still can't run complete. And again, the Buffalo defensive line linebacker group is not great run defense wise. Like, they're not great. They're okay, but they're not great. So Pittsburgh again spends a first round pick on a back, and they'll have some games that are fine, but Pittsburgh doesn't scare me offensively. Ben still looks like he's shot putting the thing around. He'll throw some things collectively, put some drives together here and there. But, you know, Ben getting to – when does Cleveland even play Pittsburgh? Like week 10? I mean, it's late. They don't play Pittsburgh until late, so we'll see. I know Pittsburgh won. Good on them. That's great. Happy for them. Whatever. I just still don't view them as a serious contender. They'll win games because that's their you know, their DNA. But it's just not a team I'm afraid of. I think you can manage Pittsburgh better than you ever could before.
Yeah, I think it was more annoying than anything else. You know, I feel like now all of a sudden they're going to find their way to 9-10 games that I didn't really feel like they should.
I hope they do. I hope they go 9-8 and they don't get a quarterback and they go into the wasteland, right?
Fair enough. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about one of the worst games that Ben has played on a PFF grade basis and probably EPA as well in a couple of years. So, I mean, he was terrible. He was like bottom of the NFL, terrible. That was, you know, not quite as bad as Baker was against Pittsburgh in the first round, the first go about last year. But he was horrendous. And the offensive line was really bad. And like you said, you know, you're not dealing with a Buffalo team that, you know, Las Vegas is going to give them a harder time than Buffalo did in the defensive front for that regard. You know, so it'll be very interesting, I think, to watch, you know, how Crosby and Ngakoue and Nassib look against that Pittsburgh line this week. But I think they pretty much are who we thought. You know, they have a terrible offensive line. It's going to limit Harris. It's going, you know, Ben is not coming back any better than he was last year. So I think we can definitively say that, in my opinion, that anybody that thought maybe a year removed from coming back from that injury, that maybe he had a little bit left in the tank, he doesn't. If he's starting the year off like this, he's going to look real bad once, once that weather turns, it's not going to be pretty, you know, so.
It just looks hard for him to throw, John. It just looks it hard. Does. He pushed one. I'm not aware. I know the Buffalo winds can get swirly up there, but he put one ball up the right sideline. Now we're doing our little Twitch pregame show, and I'm kind of half watching, half talking. And I was like, that ball maybe went 35 yards, and it looked like it needed every part of Ben's body to get out there. So he'll make the easy throws, and there'll be some easy throws that come up because they're skilled at wide receiver. There's no doubt about that, but just like what they are is a team that is so not built for sustainability in the modern NFL. And I just don't fear them. I don't fear them. And I don't know where their future's going because this draft does not have a quarterback for them. It doesn't.
No,
it doesn't.
It won't at their spot. It definitely won't. And what happened with this Matt Canada offense, you know, what happened with this play action and
they can't put him under center. They can't. Yeah, his knees won't do it, dude. That's why I'm talking to these Pittsburgh people. They're off like, yeah, man, Matt Canada fly sweep stuff, loves it, play action, blah, 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 blah. Bro, that guy's going to be camped out in the shotgun like Woodstock 69. Like, that guy is not, he doesn't want anything to do with running 8 yards deep off play action in a five-step drop, like, or a boot. He can't do it. He's a Hall of Famer. Like, shout out, Ben. You dominated Cleveland forever. You're fine. Cool. Great. Listen, you've done things in your career the Browns dream of doing, but like it's over. It's over. And the fact that they couldn't see that is, I'm happy, but they'll win some games because again, they're very skilled at certain positions. They'll win games.
And the I'm kind of happy. And
it is very legit. It is legit, but, I don't think Buffalo did a great job of exposing the discipline of the secondary in Pittsburgh, and I think the Browns do a great job of testing that and keeping their D-line honest, which is the thing. You got to keep those guys honest in Buffalo because you start doing your predictable pass stuff, and those the Watts and the Haywards and all of them can pin their ears back. You're going to find yourself in trouble. You gotta put them in a blender sometimes, and that's what Cleveland can do, and I love that about this offense. So that's enough on those guys. We'll check in on them every week, but the writing is on the wall. Like, their book has been written, in my opinion. Baltimore dealing with more injuries this week now. Westry is hurt, too. I mean, that sucks, even though we all genuinely have a disregard for Baltimore and disdain and all of it, but the injuries part sucks. But they got to play games, and we're going to get into this quarterback conversation in a minute about how there's like these quarterbacks who are playing different games. It's almost like a starter reliever type thing where they're all pitchers, but they do a different thing, right? Like, I think it's getting the gap between how certain quarterbacks play and are judged is widening. And Lamar is a perfect example. I thought he was putrid. Now you can use the excuse you want. You can say the offensive line was bad. And I know Ronnie Stanley's about to be out, yada, yada, yada. That's fine. But I watched that game and I know the Raiders defense is not that good. And they looked pretty miserable unless Lamar gets out of the pocket or does something crazy with his feet, which again, he can do. So that's what they're going to rely on this year is Lamar making hero plays, which again, he can do. But how many games are you winning on hero plays? And how many games can you keep winning when your defense is doing what their defense is doing, which is I don't know if Martindale has any other approach to football than how he plays it. So seeing them blitz 20% of the time will be the weirdest thing in the world. So I don't know. Where are you at on Baltimore?
No, I mean, to just pick right up where you left off there. I mean, you can't continue this defense with, down one of your major pieces. You know, Baltimore relies on those corners. That's their whole defensive strategy. You know, they got role players up front for rushing the passer. And, you know, they rely on creativity and, you know, crazy blitzes and man coverage. And I'm sorry, Humphrey cannot do it himself. He can't.
Those play quits on tape. Like, you better figure out a way to stop that. I had to retweet the one ugly from Cleveland last year because it's like, those are bad. And I know he's smart enough to know he's out of the play, but like, dude, that just looks quitting. And who was the safety there? Help me out. Pretty good. Earl Thomas. If you go back and watch that Nick Chubb 90-yard run they had in Baltimore to ice that game away, like, he quit. That's some weird stuff there. But anyway, keep going.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, they're used to winning. In most situations they do. With the defense that they play, and it's pretty. It's an excellent style to play if you can rely on those corners. But boy, is that not a massive, hinge point? And so you lose Peters for the year, and now you're relying on one corner. You have to adjust. I mean, I will be extremely interested to watch them this week against Kansas City. Now, granted, Kansas City really only has the one, so sure, you could put Humphreys on Hill and try and make Hardman beat you, which is what they're going to do. But it'll be interesting to see how that works out, because Kelce is just going to feast against their linebackers. So, I think other than that defense, that's the real problem. I mean, that's how they play their their defense. It is now fatally flawed, in my opinion, with Peters going down for the year. And I think you're 100% right that I don't think they have it in them to change. We'll see if they can prove me wrong on that. On the offensive side, I mean, you hit it on the head. I mean, it's just hero ball. And you should be very, very concerned if you're a Baltimore fan and you're looking at that offensive line. Because, like you said, these Raiders are not great. And they had, what was it? It was Ngakoue and Max Crosby topped all of the single games that Khalil Mack had in his career for the Raiders, both of them. And the number one and number two pressures pass rush grades in a single game. They topped them all, both of them, for that game. And, particularly Max Crosby had something like 13 pressures. Like, Myles Garrett dominated last week. Let me give you a comparison, okay? Myles Garrett dominated last week, didn't get home much, but he had 8 pressures. That was good for, like, second in the league ahead of that Monday night game. Crosby had 13.
Now they have to shift Villanueva over to the left side, which I know he has played more left, but with Staley out, it's got potential to be a disaster.
It's just going to get worse. That was 25% of his entire total last year, Crosby. He had like 48. He had 48 pressures the entire 16-game season. And I checked to make sure that he played 16. He did. So, that is really, really bad in terms of what they're going to be dealing with on the offensive line. And if they have nobody to run the ball, because they have their top three running backs out, they have the worst offensive line probably in Lamar's career that he's dealing with. They have injuries at wide receiver. I mean, this team went from, a front runner in the division to they're dead in the water. I don't know where they're going to end up, honestly.
Though, like Pittsburgh, they'll steal some games. They'll win some games. Right. And I want them to. I want them to win like 7 games. Like, that's
right.
I don't want them in the top 10. Yeah.
I don't want them in the top 10.
I agree. And two, it's like, they'll be able to do what they do with this offensive line, which is not block people and run option and read them. And they'll do that stuff a lot. And they'll they'll make plays, but you're going to have to play 16 games where some of them, a lot of them, you're going to have to throw a lot. And not like Lamar throws one great ball and everybody tweets it and says, like, he can't pass with the weird capitalization thing, you know, like people love to do. But I'm, you know, like watching Lamar's going to have to sit in and chuck it like a lot. Like they're going to make him do that. That's what teams should be doing. And he'll make some here and there, but the consistency stuff is not real. It's just not. And if you want to like look at certain aspects of Lamar that make it look, you know, make it paint a different picture, because again, this is a segue to what we're talking about, because guys who can run create opportunities organically for their throwing, right? Because defenses have to play them differently. I expect defenses just to sit and make them throw. Like I don't, you know, you can run it here and there, but we're going to make you throw more than ever. And he can do it some, he's fine for the most part, but it's not who he is. It's just not, that's not a knock on him. It's just who he is. So I would expect defenses to, you know, try to play from out in front and make him have to throw the football downfield as often as you can. No, that's always the formula, but you can't be that way when you think about, man, we got to really try to figure out a way to score on that defense. I just think the intimidation with them is gone, like the intimidation factor that they have traditionally brought. So we'll see, man. We're gonna see how it shakes out. You know, it's ingrained in our DNA to never count these teams out. And again, I'm really not. They could end up better than we think. I just sitting here right now with how good I think the Browns really are. I do think they're good, and I don't think that's, you know, the typical homerism thing. Like, we'll see how good they are this week. It'll tell us a little more about last week, but I just don't see it. It would be not like disappointed season failure stuff, but they need to win this division this year. It is all, the stars are aligned to get it done. And barring freak injuries, which we've seen some O-line injuries pop up this week. We don't think the severity is that bad, but you just got to really, with how long their first portion of the season is before the bye week. I don't think the bye week is until like late October or November. Just get through it healthy, man. Play good enough, get through it healthy.
Right.
And I think you can win this division with 11 wins this year. I really do. I think you can go 11-6 and win the division. And that's the goal. Get a home playoff game, man. I don't care how that home playoff game looks. Get it. So that kind of wraps up the AFC North. And that, you know, it segues to our talking point, which is I wish, John, that there was a way to evaluate sort of how difficult a quarterback's collective throws are throughout a game. Like, even though Baker goes 9 of 9 with a 160 for play action, plays great, most passing yards I'll play, those throws he was making, bro, were not easy. They were not easy. You know, the only one I thought that was pretty easy was the Schwartz 2 throws. I thought he could have thrown a better ball up the left sideline. I definitely thought he threw that ball on the pylon route. I thought it was good enough. I thought Schwartz got a little wonky in how he tracked it, but those were the only two throws where I was like, okay, pretty clear separation. Otherwise, he was throwing tight window keyhole type throws several different times. And the difference, again, between the throws that Pat is making and Baker making are different, which, again, goes back to the point, John, of like, these guys are playing different games. And it's so weird. Like, the future of quarterback is running. It just seems to be, because what it does... is we used to look at running from the microscope of, they're going to get hurt, right? I don't want to expose them to hits. And while that was true in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s when defenders could come rip your head off, right? That was true. And I think you did fear your Mike Vicks of the world getting really seriously hurt in the open field or any quarterback designed run. Nowadays, there's less dangerous hitting going on. Defenders are scared to hurt quarterbacks, and it's like you try to find the Kylers of the world, those types, and even Pat, because Pat can run, as we just saw, who can really change games with their legs, because what you're seeing is less of a fear from the offensive standpoint of running your quarterback, and it's making defenses play different coverages. The coverages Baker sees as a guy who can run a little bit but is definitely not a running quarterback are completely different than what we see the Lamars, the Mahomes, the Kylers deal with. And I think that is something that has to be considered down the line as we watch the game evolve, is less so that my quarterback will get hurt because they can protect themselves in such a better way these days. I mean, when's the last time you saw a quarterback like like really get hurt running. It just doesn't seem to happen as much anymore. Maybe I'm just blanking right now, John.
No, it might be Robert Griffin.
That's probably it. That's probably it. But it's like you just don't see them get hurt the way people fear, because they can slide, and when you slide, you can't get hit, and people are generally afraid of, like, if you hit a quarterback the wrong time, the wrong way, you're going to get, like, the mob is going to come after you. So they're protecting quarterbacks beyond just the pocket, right? They're protecting them outside the pocket. So that's where things get really interesting to me, is if you have the threat of a quarterback who can run, it is changing how defenses are played. This is why I'm so interested in how the Browns play this week, for example, or whoever else they play the rest of the year. Is like, are they doing the Mahomes thing, or are they going to try to get more creative against guys that they care less about whether they move around or not? Because what it does is it creates opportunities. Like, the Pat just has to kind of point guard it. Like, he's just kind of getting it from A to B most of the time, because teams are so afraid of his guys and his ability. And it's the same with Lamar. A lot of Lamar's passing opportunities are generated because of fear of how they have to play the run game and how it's unique and how it's different, right?
So you literally can't play man against him.
You really can't. So go ahead. I'm just off on a tangent here, but I just feel like sometimes I watch Baker play, because that's who I watch all the time, and then I'll key in on a game, like I went and watched the Arizona game and Tennessee, and I watched, you know, obviously we all watch Baltimore and, you know, the Raiders. It's like, they're just, these defenses are playing, and the Browns defense, even in that game, they're just playing a different game. And it's just, Baker's life is so much more difficult. That's why when people are like, well, all he needs or all he can use is play action. Well, it's like, okay, he doesn't have the added luxury that some other guys do. So the coaching staff tries to help create those luxuries. Does that make him any less valuable when he's a pinpoint play action passer? No. That's what is so stupid to me. We don't talk about and again, this is just like, these guys have natural talent, so I'm not taking anything away from the running quarterbacks, but it does create opportunities similar to what it does if Baker turns his back and extends the football to fake a handoff. That, to me, is how you match the things that these running quarterbacks get. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And let me take a rip at some of this, because, you know, I think you got to kind of set Pat aside. He's athletic enough to run. He's a little more athletic than Baker. He can throw from his arm angles. Like, he's a unicorn. So I'm going to set him aside. But, you know, you got a, you know, Lamar Jackson's a great, you know, counter to this, you know, because he's otherworldly. He forces you to, you can't turn your back to him. That's why you can't play man. You can't turn your back to him, because they can run four verts, and if you're playing man, he's just going to take off, and he's going to have a canyon of space to run in front of him. And, you know, God help you if you let this guy get in space. That is an advantage. Like, people got to understand, like, that is a huge advantage, very akin to, you know, a good play action game where, you know, you have fooled the defense and you are creating some open players. Well, you know, Lamar, really his only task, you know, I want to do this, but be respectful, but, you know, like, his task as a quarterback, if he learned to just absolutely slice and dice zone, then you wouldn't be able to stop him, because you can't play tight man coverage against him, because he will punish you for that on his own. He doesn't need any help for that.
Yeah, it's a fact.
So, you know, I think that it is fair to, you know, to say that that play action is a nice counter to quarterbacks who, you know, are more pocket oriented, that don't have that, you know, and you're talking about, you know, good quarterbacks. When you're, you know, Tom Brady can't run with the ball. You know, Justin Herbert isn't going to be running the ball. You know, Baker is not really going to be, they can move, you know, they can bumble forward if you let that happen and those types of things.
Yeah.
But this, you know, it's not the same threat we're talking about. And I'll tell you, like, you know, you mentioned like the, you know, the job being harder for Baker. I mean, a lot of this has to do with receivers. You know, I mean, you want to take anybody who has a better EPA over the last, you know, year and a half with Baker, find somebody with a receiving core that matches the kind of separation he has. You're not going to find him above him in terms of EPA and grades and those kind of things. And you talked about the, trying to find, some numbers. I finally found the right stat for this. All right. So I just want to read this off real quick. All right. So Next Gen Stats has, it's called aggressiveness percentage. All right. So aggressiveness percentage, this is defined as aggressiveness tracks the amount, and they use player tracking helmet data, GPS data. All right. So this is very, very accurate stuff. Nobody's like making subjective calls on these types of things. Aggressiveness tracks the amount of passing attempts a quarterback makes that are into tight coverage, where a defender is within 1 yard or less of the receiver at the time of completion or incompletion. All right, so I'm going to give you two games here, right? I'm going to give you last year's game against Kansas City. Baker Mayfield, 13.5% aggressiveness. 13.5% of his passes were into tight coverage. Pat Mahomes, 3.3%. That reflects pretty accurately what we were seeing on the field. Now, go to this year. Check this one out, all right? Week one, Baker Mayfield leads the entire league, 32.1% in this aggressive percentage. Pat Mahomes, he is third from the bottom at 8.3. So
it tells a story, John. It tells a story.
That is, look at that gap. So when you're talking about those things, there's the numbers that say exactly what you're seeing with your eyes. So
it's just they're just playing a different game, and it's not, again, it's, you're walking this, you're dancing over a fine line here, because you're not trying to take away from those guys who can run. Like, that is awesome. If your quarterback can do it, it's awesome, and it's less of a thing you should fear than you used to fear. You know what I mean? So from a like, my guy's a running quarterback, I don't want that. You shouldn't fear it that way anymore. So that's where things get so interesting to me, is how do the Browns, and they're probably asking that question, and they're still probably asking it, right? Like, because that those numbers you read from week one are real. So what you need to do is, how do I create some advantages for my young quarterback to take advantage of pretty strong play action ability? And that's how you do it. That's how you give him some of the windows that other quarterbacks create organically. You have to manufacture them. That doesn't take away from Baker, because I don't think he's just a jag in terms of what he performs off of play action. So again, that's just the thing. Like, people want to blame Baker for that stuff or take it away from him. Well, why? He's good at it. The other guys still get play action. Mahomes was one of the top play action quarterbacks in football last year. So, you know, it's not like Baker's doing something that nobody else is allowed to do, right?
No.
So,
no,
and like, I'll close with this real quick. Like, he'll get there. The hope, John, is someday that they're in third and 13s and we're pretty confident he'll figure it out. You know, like, that's it. Like, someday there might be where he's in year 5, 6, 7, where these guys get, and they're more pick-apart defenses on their own without any sort of play action, right? Or any help. I don't. It's not even help. Like, just kind of non-play action, straight drop throws. And I still think he could do more of it than they give him credit for. But, that's what you want. It's like, down the line, you put more and more in his pocket to do, right? That's what you want. So, I don't know. That's what's kind of fascinating. I don't know if I'm even saying it the right way, but it's a longer process. Right now they're doing things, and I just think play action is framed as cheating somehow, and it's not. It's an element that you can use at any time. There is no rule in saying you have 22 play action plays in a game and that's it. It's all you can do. Not allowed to go over it. You can do it anytime you want. So he gets, like, it's for the other guys, it's this, oh my God, look at them. They can do this. They create those opportunities, right on. Good for you. But if Baker does something that helps to kind of level that playing field a little bit, it's a knock on him. So I don't totally understand. But your point there with the stats about the aggressiveness rate is so good. It tells every part of the story you and I have been talking about for what it seems like forever now.
Let me give one more bit of context for that, okay? Baker led the league, like I said, in this aggressive percentage, 32% of his throws into these tight windows. His completion percentage was 75%. His expected completion percentage was 60%. is 15 points above what you would expect for a guy having to throw into those windows. Here's number two, Ben Roethlisberger, 31.3. Very close, right? Very close to the same aggressive percentage. Ben Roethlisberger was minus 8.1 in expected completion percentage. He completed 56% of his throws for 188 yards. All right. You know, the number three guy, Tua, 25. So now we're getting pretty far away from 32 here, but 25.9%. He was negative 3.5 in expected completion percentage. He completed 59.3% of his passes. You know, so you take those top three that are, you know, even in the, you know, Ben's almost on the line. Tua's a good amount below these guys. Both these guys completed less than what they thought, less than 60% of their throws. Baker completed 75%. So don't even come at me with it's the play action that, you know, that made that happen. He's actually completing these at extremely high level for having these tight windows as well. So,
yep, just about this point, man, the only thing kind of lingering is the sample size grows. It keeps growing. Right.
Just keep going, man.
Keep going and win some games at the end, and I think it'll happen. Again, I really do. It's just gonna happen. There's always those guys who start their career and you're like, he can't finish games or he can't, you know, whatever. Like, it just, he'll turn a corner. I have no doubt about it. I thought he started to turn a corner last year. I had nothing but confidence they're gonna go down and win that game. And again, if you'll see the O-line video, John, you got to watch it. The video I do with Kyle to show you why it happened. It's the weirdest thing. Betonio thinks the ball is thrown. He thinks it's thrown because Baker pumps. The guy that is engaged to Treader next to him jumps. So Betonio looks downfield. As he's looking downfield because he thinks it's thrown, he kind of stops because he's expecting, like, oh, the ball's gone, right? This guy next to me, I felt him jump up in the air. And that's when Sorensen is able to, like, oh, he didn't throw it, relocate quickly and dive and trip him. It's the wildest thing. It's the wildest thing. If that doesn't happen, the game goes on and maybe they go down and win it. That's the football is like that game of, what's Al Pacino? The game of inches, right? Like, they're all around.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yep. All right, bro. Fun time as usual, man. These are going to be our every Friday, guys. So, hope you're enjoying them. If you're not, kind of like politely piss off. We're just going to keep talking. And and if you ever want to throw some topics at us that, like, hey, Jake, hit me up on Twitter. Hey, you and John, will you guys talk about this week? Or what do you think? Always willing to have those suggestions. You guys have done really great with those. So check YouTube. Make sure you check out and see the three films that I'll have up there. I'll keep them separated so you can just quickly jump through whatever one you want to watch. Defense, offensive line, and a Baker breakdown. And that's it. And we'll have some Texans stuff going up over the next few days. I'll have a Texans guest on to talk about them for your Know Your Foe this weekend. It'll be a fun time. John, you're the man, dude. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Jake. I appreciate it. Always a good time, man.
All right, guys, that's a wrap for today's episode. Keep spreading the word about this pod. I appreciate you. Downloads are crazy. You're supporting me. You're supporting my family. We really appreciate you guys very, very much. Have a great Friday, and we'll catch up on Saturday morning. Until then, go Browns.